to the first episode of Future Commerce. I'm Brian Lang.
I'm Philip Jackson. And this is a show that talks about future commerce trends in our industry. We're not talking about the stuff that's happening today. We're talking about the stuff that's going to be happening tomorrow. So thank you for joining us for our first episode.
Yeah, we'll cover all kinds of different topics like conversational commerce, passive commerce, cognitive commerce.
Ooh.
Alexa, Watson. Yeah.
A little Alexa action.
Yes, a little Alexa action.
And we're going to talk about some of those things that are happening in other parts of the world that you may have heard about, but you're not really engaged in. In fact, you know, there's about a billion people on the planet now that are all shopping online via Messenger. And that's a part of conversational we'll be talking about at length today, actually. Absolutely. So what actually are you, Brian, what are you most interested in when it comes to future commerce? Let's kind of start there and talk about how we came up with the idea for this show.
That's a good question. I think for me, there's just so much happening right now. And I feel like a lot of what gets covered in the industry is sort of the here and now and kind of what has been and what has been successful. And what I'd really like to see is someone looking out a little bit, just a little bit further.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, when you and I started talking, we were both like, there's a lot ahead. And, you know, we want to be able to talk about that. There's not many forums to get out there and discuss that. So, some of the things that really interest me are conversational commerce, like I mentioned. So stuff with voice, stuff with chat, and especially the, you know, voice related activities are really exciting right now. Certainly virtual reality. I think there's going to be quite a bit of a play there here not too long from now. And so, yeah, we'll definitely get into the details as we do the show. But there's a couple things that I'm really excited about.
And one of the things that I think when we were talking about these sorts of things, we actually started geeking out about this stuff before we ever talked about doing a show. And
yes.
And as we kind of dug into it a little bit, I realized you and I do, you know, we do the here and now commerce every day.
Yes.
Because we're both commerce professionals and we both are engaged in digital commerce. And we hear about this stuff and we see other people kind of talking about the future. And we decided, well, you know, since the future isn't quite here yet, let's actually talk about the future like it is here.
Exactly.
Because these are things that are going to be happening all around us. So as we kind of get into the show, the next few episodes, you'll really kind of get an understanding of where we're trying to head. But I think you're going to hear us reinforce a concept from today's show forward. The concept for me that made me want to do the future commerce, this podcast is that not every single brand out there is important and deserving of a business to consumer catalog based website where your brand is reinforced through a catalog and people are forced to register with you and sign up with you and shop with you, because that's not really how we engage in commerce in real life anymore.
That's right.
Either. And so that's really where I felt like that was the thing, the awakening, if you will, for me about what might be ahead for us. So let's talk a little bit about those things that are ahead. In fact, there were a bunch of things that were announced today. Did you watch the WWDC Apple announcements?
I caught
today?
Some snippets. I was between putting my kids to bed and and all of that. kind of tried to go back and watch some chunks of it. So, you know, I caught some of the highlights. I read up a little bit on it, but I didn't get the full experience like some of y'all did.
Yeah, the full experience was left some people with a lot to be desired, and there's a lot of other places on the internet that you can listen to much better Apple Apple podcast.
Yes.
Type reviews, very in-depth information. But
although you're a little bit mad, right?
I'm a little mad because, yeah, there were no hardware announcements, but that notwithstanding, I felt like the two things that we could have, actually three things that I think will be the game changers in the future of the way that we engage in commerce, at least in North America, in the next 5 years. There were three announcements today that I think are groundbreaking. So the first one is Apple Pay for the web. Yeah. And that was huge, because, you know, up till now it required, Apple Pay requires a device in store, at a cash register, and it uses, you know, NFC, you know, wireless technology, and it's been around for almost 2 years now, I believe. Do you have an Apple device, Brian?
No, I run Google all the way.
Yeah, and I'm on Android too. And that's why we're going to talk a lot about Android later. But but for all of those who do have who do have an iPhone or one of the Apple Watch devices, this is a really engaging thing because it's going to use both the Apple Watch and the Touch ID, the fingerprint sensor on the iPhone, to be able to authenticate web purchases. It's very unclear right now. I was reading a little bit through through their developer documentation that's already live and online, and it does look like they're intending this to be Safari only.
Yeah, that's correct. And so actually, I think they're going to do a couple sessions on it tomorrow. I think it might be for developers only.
Right.
But there's going to be more that's released about this tomorrow.
Yeah. So we're gonna find out a lot more in the future. But if they're, you know, we heard a lot about this sort of payment breakthrough technology, and sure, there's already a payment standard, like a payment request API standard, that's being ratified for from the W3C for the web, for payments in general. So this is, you know, Apple has promised to open source and contribute back to that, some of the things that they're learning. And we're hearing a little bit from Google's open source web team, Adi Osmani and Paul Irish, and some of the other people that are pretty well known in that team have been talking about it today. But in short, it's a really good first step, but I think it's just that. It's a very small first step, right?
Yeah, I agree. It's gotta be the beginning, because there's already payment tools out there that are doing a lot more anyways. So.
And to be honest with you, I think this sort of thing has been available for a while. There was a press release not too long ago from Shopify about their point of sale app. So if you're a Shopify store owner, you could download and subscribe to a point of sale app from the iTunes store already. So the App Store had a Shopify like web portal that you could pay with Apple Pay for ages now.
Yeah.
That's almost 10, 12 months ago. So, you know, it's not like 250,000 websites didn't already sort of have this sort of functionality.
Although it wasn't really taken advantage of, or at least I didn't feel like it was. I didn't go, when I was shopping on the web, I didn't really see Apple Pay out there.
Yeah, it's not really out there as a payment method on the web. And I think that's because it has been, that Shopify thing is really relegated to a mobile device, like as your payment or shopping thing, shopping platform. I do expect, because they are already integrated with Shopify, that we'll probably see that in the very near future.
Oh, no, I think they already announced it. If I recall, I was like,
see, I was fuzzy on it too. And, you know, we'll do a little more digging, but I was fuzzy on it too. It did sound to me like that was the intention, but all I could find after post press release was all point of sale app information. So maybe someone who's listening can chime in. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
Definitely.
A little bit about that. But I think that's just the first step. Obviously, that is something that is happening today, and other people are making breakthroughs in this space.
Let me ask you a question, Philip. Where do you see this going? I mean, what do you see kind of as the future of Apple Pay?
I mean, it obviously has to transcend Safari for it to be to do something groundbreaking. But I think it's more going right after PayPal's market.
Yes.
This is direct payments play. This is trusted payments, trusted, you know, like a trusted and secure, like that was the big thing around this. They talked a lot about security and end-to-end encryption, and and they talked a lot about I forget what it was, like diversified encryption or something to that effect. Like they made sure to kind of sell this as a trusted way to pay in store and online. And I think that is kind of almost verbatim PayPal's tagline of like 15 years ago. So it does look like they're very firmly going more toward the payments.
Definitely. Yeah. Kind of a, we've already got user adoption on our phones. We can take that and kind of take a good chunk of PayPal's market.
Exactly. And yeah. I think, you know, PayPal stock took a tumble a few weeks ago when they did announce that they would be planning to do a JavaScript SDK for Apple Pay. So I do think that the markets at least believe that PayPal is at risk because of Apple's what is it now? Over a billion iPhone users in the world, so or something ridiculous. So I think there's time will tell. I think that's the play.
The other thing I think, this is looking at the future, but obviously Apple's looking to make some moves in sort of the connected home. And I think, this is obviously a few years out, but their payments tool might end up playing a part in that too. And this is, again, just another step in that direction,
I think. Right. I like that. The HomeKit stuff is really intriguing to me.
Yep.
Especially automation. We'll talk a little bit in future episodes about, the kind of automation that we already have today and some of the things that may be able to happen in the future. We're seeing a lot of advancement in those areas. I think payments are becoming more accessible, especially from like a digital authentication point of view. I think trust and identity are huge, and we saw a big theme around that at some of the announcements at the WWDC.
Yep.
A lot of it, even at macOS level, proximity to your Apple Watch. So I think a lot of these devices, wearables, are going to, as other players start to delve into the space, like Fitbit, right? Fitbit is wading into payments. And, we saw Jawbone sort of fold up its wearables division. I think we're seeing a little bit of a collapse in the number of players in the wearables space. So payments and wearables are the future. And I know Visa now has a payments ring that they're testing out at the Olympics this year.
I didn't catch that. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's huge. So I do think, that is the future. And, the idea of trust the devices that are part of your everyday life are part of that trust circle. Yes. So yeah, that's going to be a huge thing in the future. And I think whoever really wins the identity management game is going to win is going to be one of the major players in the payments game.
So true.
Is kind of a weird thing. Why this kind of melds a little bit into the LinkedIn announcement, which is a little bit like off topic, but also very, very much on topic. So Brian, what happened today? There's a little bit of a,
So Microsoft bought LinkedIn
for a ridiculous,
yeah. It was 26 billion.
Yeah. That's a 13 Shopify's,
which was, do you mean Demandware? Are you going with Demandware?
No, I was going on market cap, but okay, yes, yeah. Or 13 Demandwares, if you want to buy 13 Demandwares. Well, a little less than 13. A little
less than that, yeah.
it's a whole lot of cloud computing commerce platforms. How's that? That's a lot of money, 26 bills. That's...
I think it's definitely an interesting play. Microsoft is generally considered kind of behind the curve in the innovative realm, and
says the man who had a Windows phone for ages, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think you would know better than anyone behind the Windows phone. I mean, the idea of one operating system to rule them all was compelling to me.
The brand promise was there. That's the key.
The promise was there. That's right. I think that there's still a lot that Microsoft has going for it. And buying LinkedIn, I mean, it's kind of already got the Microsoft vibe in terms of user experience. I think there's definitely, so the cool things that I can see happening out of this play, I think there could be some synergies between Dynamics and LinkedIn, their CRM, because a lot of people do a lot of business development on LinkedIn. There's no doubt about it. I mean, there's quite a few podcasts out there about that.
Right, just doing biz dev on
LinkedIn. LinkedIn. That's right.
Right,
Lindsay Boggs and others. So, the thing about that is, if they were able to actually connect that to their CRM and make that useful, I could see this being a really nice play because, a lot of B2B sales and a lot of larger larger business sales happen via LinkedIn. And so I like it. I like it.
Can you see any effect though from like a from a commerce perspective? You know, I think the
yeah, I don't idea... think Microsoft's going to do much from that.
I was trying to take a spin at it. I kind of think, you know, Microsoft has some other, you know, interesting opportunities that sort of match up with what Google and Apple are doing. Microsoft has Skype,
right? For sure.
So Microsoft has Skype. Now Microsoft has LinkedIn, which could arguably be one of the largest identity platforms. Forget the social network aside. Put that aside for a minute, because it's you know, nobody really, I don't know. There are very few people that I know that are engaged every day on LinkedIn as a social media platform.
Yep.
It is more of, like you said, a business development tool. I think if Microsoft could have a juggernaut in the chat conversational commerce space, if you pair their, well, their...
You think they're going to integrate Skype into LinkedIn?
I think Skype, but no, seriously, if Skype... Now, this would be the thing that they, that even I think... that eBay thought that they were going to do with Skype, which, you know, I think was too soon for its time, but was very forward thinking, because that's what people said 15 years ago or whatever it was. 10, 12 years ago when Skype was purchased by eBay to begin with was, you know, we don't even want to meet these people to buy stuff like on Craigslist. And you certainly don't want to chat with the person, you know, in Thailand who's shipping you the guitar that's, you know, a knockoff clone of the Fender Stratocaster you're trying to buy. Like, who wants to have these face-to-face conversations with people? Because everyone saw Skype as a long-distance carrier almost.
Yes, but
now that's true. Now that Skype has transcended that and is understood to be a chat platform, and now that we have other players in the space like Slack is dominating.
Yes,
you know, both from a business perspective and from even personal communication perspective, Slack is starting to take away market share from even WeChat and what's the other one? WhatsApp.
Yeah.
So and WhatsApp was like $1 billion acquisition too. So these are highly valued platforms with a lot of eyeballs, and I think Microsoft is building a really compelling product that could be
viable
for future commerce. I do think that it's possible.
It's possible.
That would be the third renaissance for Microsoft if they could pull off this.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. Like, it would be a beautiful thing. It's just a matter of them actually, you know, taking advantage of what they have and actually making those integrations happen.
Again, that's the future. And you know what? Apple's doing this today now. So Apple also announced the iMessage API is now going to be open up to developers too. And along with that, a ton of revs to iMessage to make it a lot more like Snapchat, basically. I mean, there's a lot of like a very emoji image drawing centric, a lot of facial recognition sort of stuff. Very, very interesting stuff that they're kind of doing there. So iMessage API being opened up kind of comes along with like Google's announcement with Allo, right? And their new chat platform. I think almost bang for bang, you see every single feature
which
in
is
both of those.
Kind of annoying. Like,
it's a little annoying.
Yeah, like we've got a lot of chat apps right now, and I keep seeing people talking about like these ridiculous like compilers.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, then we're like getting to the office where, what was it, Ryan invents Woof or whatever it was.
Yes, Woof, yeah. Woof. Which, by the way, is one of my favorite television shows of all time. You'll hear me quote it from time to time. But yes, Woof. Woof.com.
Exactly.
Exactly. Don't just say it, woof it. So, but you know what people are saying, that there's been a lot of studies, people are saying, and I don't have the perfect data in front of me right now at the moment. But chat apps are the next breed of social networks. They're much smaller social groups. It's less about people, having wide social networks and have much more about having smaller social networks. In fact, I think the Pew Research Center said that the time we spend on chat applications outweighs social media 2 to 1. So yeah. we're spending way more time on Slack at work. We're spending way more time on Facebook Messenger than we are on Facebook.
Makes sense. Like talking to people is exactly what we want to do. So,
and now iMessage is now your text message application platform. Hangouts has become the text message platform that's preferred on Google Nexus devices. Will probably be superseded by Allo. So you will see these connected chat platforms, like as if we need another fourth or fifth one of these, but you'll start to see a condensing in the space. I think the four major players in the space will
consolidate.
Yeah. I hope we do see some consolidation, but I think just having open APIs will allow a lot of interesting companies like LivePerson. Mm-hmm. Do you know LivePerson, which is so LivePerson is a third-party chat application that can sort of plug into AOL Instant Messenger or its own little, you know, hosted Java web app or something. But it's like that thing that you paste on your website if you want to annoy people after they've been there for 10 seconds and haven't bought something yet. And to, like, push people in your conversion funnel. It can also be used for customer support. LivePerson is pivoting. LivePerson is also now starting to talk about conversational commerce and how the commerce decisions that are made in conversation have always shown higher conversion rates and higher average basket size. So now, you know, bringing some AI to the mix and taking those off of just the JavaScript widget that you stick on your website and actually pushing people to the platforms where they already are, like Facebook Messenger, that is the next generation of people who have been doing this well for a long time.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that we'll see is people will, like, each platform will sort of find its niche. I mean, that's just the natural effects of competition. In order to drive users, you know, to get users to adopt their platform, they're going to start building out different functionality that's really going to set them apart, which will be really nice. I think, you know, right now, a lot of the chat apps, the way that I use them, at least, I'm doing basically the same thing with all of them, which is chat with people.
And, but don't you feel like your circles are much more closely defined? Like, for instance, on Facebook, there are people that I know, you know, in real life. And I really don't accept someone on Facebook as a friend request, unless that is a glimpse into my real life. It's pictures of my kids.
Sure.
So it's like a much more personal connection with people as opposed to, you know, a Slack group that I happen to be part of, which is not necessarily my work group, although there might be people from work on that Slack group, but it might be like a Magento developers Slack group or something. So I think there's, you know, our circles are already being aggregated into different platforms just by virtue of the way that we use social media today.
Yeah. I think another good example of this is WeChat. Connie Chan from A16Z talked about this quite a bit in an article she wrote back in 2015. Where she talked about how, you know, WeChat really, like, they were kind of the late comer because Weibo was way down the road. And so they focused a lot more on a system that prioritized usefulness and functionality above everything else, as opposed to sort of a social channel.
Right.
And that helped them, I mean, really become the monster that they are now. And so I think that's going to happen, you know, in different ways throughout this whole industry.
Do you think that there's a lot of overlap in people? We just talked about the fact that you and I are both on two or three message platforms. Do you think Weibo and WeChat have, is there a bifurcation there? Or are there a lot of people that use both because that's where a lot of people happen to be?
Yeah, I think they use both. Circles. Definitely. I mean, obviously, I mean, I'm not using Weibo, so I don't really know from personal experience if I would want to use both. But I think, like, they've really definitely kind of carved out their own markets, and I think that people use them to accomplish different things. Could one of them sort of take over the other's market? Probably. I mean, I think that's true for any of these companies.
Yeah, but at like 500 million users, or, you know, almost a billion users between one or two of them, Yeah. You know, that would be a pretty massive consolidation.
That would be a massive consolidation. That's absolutely right. Yeah.
What's really interesting, because now that we're talking about Weibo and WeChat, the demo that they gave for the iMessage API announcement was like they demoed, you know, all the features of iMessage, but the API openness demo was a restaurant I like to go to in the Valley called Curry Up Now. There's one in San Mateo that we usually drop by when I'm out there to visit my sister-in-law and brother-in-law. And so their demo app was to have like a group lunch order, you know, at the office or whatever. It's mm-hmm. like, well, we're ordering from Curry Up Now. What do you want? And you can like see the whole menu. You can add whatever you want. Just that's like,
sweet.
Yeah. And then it's one group shopping cart that you all make a group decision on. And then when you're ready to purchase, you can just pay for it with Apple Pay. That's so awesome. Very, very cool, but not necessarily like, speaking of Weibo and WeChat, this is how commerce is being conducted right now already.
It's not on those
platforms
stuff.
in China, right? So those are things that that's not future. That's like past 3 years ago commerce. Alibaba and a lot have Alipay have sort of already penetrated those markets and made those sorts of things possible.
Totally. It's kind of funny. I just read recently, and I forget where I read this, that the experience in China is like the worst of the internet and the best of the internet at the exact same time.
Exactly. Well, you think about it this way. If you know, we don't have a billion people to have to contend to or contend with in the United States. I mean, we have a third of that. Maybe, and that's every man, woman, and child. So we're, you know, we've not decided yet that it's infeasible for us to create, you know, branded B2C websites for literally every business. We've not just given up on that pipe dream. And I think hopefully we do. I don't think everybody needs a. I'm going to keep reinforcing that point. I think that's why this is so compelling. You know, for Curry Up Now to put their investment in a place where I want to order from, you know, my pizza joint on text message. That would be amazing.
Yeah, like, I'd way rather do that than go to
I don't want to install your app. I don't want to go to your website, which is broken and has PHP errors on it. I just want like the same pie I always get.
Yep.
Like, that's all I want. It's all I've ever wanted, Brian.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, isn't that what everyone wants, really? Just the
same
pizza.
In fact, I don't even want to type it. I don't even want to type it. I just want to speak it out loud. And
that's
right. That's
right. That gets into our next topic.
Well, I'm so lazy. I don't even want to use my thumbs.
Kind of actually do that. Like, they were kind of a front runner in that realm.
And do what, exactly?
Ask Dom. Remember that?
Dude, that was a thing.
That was a thing. It's still kind of a thing, I think. I haven't actually done it because we don't really have any Domino's nearby. But
oh, you don't?
No.
You don't have a steaming circle of botulism near you?
Oh, no, we have some of those, but they're not okay. Domino's.
Yeah, so the Siri API was also announced today. They're opening a Siri to developers, which, you know, if you are a fan of Amazon and, you know, Alexa and all those good things, these are things that have been around for over a year.
Yes.
For developers of those technologies.
Well, and so, again, this is kind of a Me Too play by Apple. Like, if they didn't do this, they would be.
They were the first to market.
They were the first to market. Exactly.
They were the first.
Yeah, Siri was like, it was hot stuff back in the day.
Yeah, Google Now was the Me Too play, and Google Now has far surpassed anything Siri can do. In fact, all of the Siri additional announcements that were made today were all very much catching up to what Google Now has been able to do for ages. But to the credit of Apple, every single desktop computer that they have will be able to run Siri come the fall.
Well, again, that's a Me Too play with Microsoft because Cortana's been on.
Yes.
Yeah, Windows 10 forever. So.
And they've been putting the gun to people's heads to update to Windows 10 for at least a year.
I read some interesting stat. I think it was in, where was this? Was this Mary Meeker's report? I can't remember where it was, but I think like it was like 25% of searches in the toolbar of Windows 10 were voice searches.
Yeah. Well, it is phenomenal. When you think of it from an accessibility point of view, your voice is there. You know, the people that are physically impaired to be able to use like a physical device,
yep.
You know, they have much larger complications than people who are still able to speak. If you're blind, you can likely speak. You know, people that have various degrees of deafness can still probably interact in some way, but when you have no other touch interaction, no other display interaction, when it's just your voice, it is the most simplest human interface that there is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it's incredibly intuitive, like especially when you do it as well as Amazon have done.
Yes.
You know,
we haven't touched on that yet.
Yeah. Oh, we haven't. And the commerce experiences that I've had with Amazon's conversational, the spoken word commerce experiences that I've had with the Alexa devices that I own, of which I have two Echoes and a Dot now. But my nice. my fascination with that extends to the fact that my 4 and 5 year old knew how to use it within 3 seconds of exactly. me opening it up. That's how my
kids learn how to tell time instead yeah. of reading it on a clock. I mean, yes, they're wow. learning that too. But no, I mean it was like my 5 year old son came to me and said, "Hey, Dad, what time is it?" And I was like, "Ask Alexa." He's like, "Alexa, what time is it?" And he got the time.
Exactly. And those are the things that I think, because you know, you think about how
I just cued Alexa there, by the way.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah, speaking of which, a little preview, we might have Alexa as a guest on our show.
Yes, we're going to have that happen. Yes. I'm really excited about that, too. So, you know, it's one of those emerging technologies. I think, you know, if Amazon doesn't squander this the way that Apple have squandered Siri and that, you know, 3 year lead time they had with the iPhone 4 and the ability to and the Siri built in, the Siri functionality, you could do some of this stuff. To be fair, you could do a lot with Siri right out of the gate, but to not open it up to developers and to not sort of crowdsource the wisdom, it's the wisdom of the crowd, that James Surowiecki sort of like approach, where the crowd will always, the developer community that Apple has, first of all, is phenomenal and right. fanatical. And if you can allow them to tap into that interface, like they've done with the iOS store, there really could be, it would become a juggernaut, but
yeah, it would. The question is, are they going to get there too late? Now. I mean,
they are late.
They are late because late.
Yeah, Amazon already has a built-in marketplace of, you know, millions of businesses that sell products through right. Amazon.
Yes.
And Apple does not have
follow
that.
Follow the money.
Yeah. I mean, Apple's best play here is that they have a big retail presence with Apple Pay now. They have a big partnership with a lot of device manufacturers who have integrated Apple Pay functionality into their sites.
Yep.
Apple Pay works on a D-PAN, just kind of a little inside baseball, but Apple Pay works the same way that, you know, all of the other mobile chat approaches and all of the, you know, third party payment providers are using now, including you know, Chase Payment Tech, the American Express payment solution now, even PayPal, all of these, they're all using this D-PAN approach, where really it's like one time use credit card numbers with a single auth key. So really everybody's sort of, it doesn't really matter that it's a hardware device or the medium anymore. Everybody's kind of moved to this model, and really Apple's only play and their only specialization is that they really try to do one thing and do it extremely well, right. or at least that's what they used to do. But Amazon has the retail component down. You know, Apple will rely, outside of its retail stores, Apple relies 100% on partners and other people to implement. And if there's anything that I've seen in the payment space, is that when you rely on partners to implement, you will always have an experience that is second rate.
It could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and
that's why Amazon
people.
Works so well. Yeah. It no worked. Yeah. And you saw this with eBay.
Yeah.
eBay had this exact same conundrum with a lot of its acquisitions, in that, you know, things that were compelling like Red Laser and Fido and a lot of really interesting niche plays that sort of get gobbled up and never really find their way into mass adoption because it really relies on third party. They resold the product as a pairing or an upsell or an add-on, and in actuality that should have been the whole focus of their business. And Apple has a lot of things that it's doing very well, but Apple's retail presence right now really depends on Shopify, and it depends on maybe they get Demandware and they can get on five more stores or however many Demandware stores there are nowadays. But you know, it's going to depend on partnerships with already large install bases.
Yeah.
You know, yeah,
speaking of payments, let's go back to that for a second.
Sure.
Because, we talked about Apple Pay, but we've mentioned a few others, but there are like 20 payment providers out there right now. It's crazy. Like,
it's a massive
Amazon
space.
Has one, Visa Checkout, Samsung, Android, Stripe, PayPal, Chase just released theirs. It's getting out of control. Like, I feel like, you know, it's there's so many different payment solutions. Something's going to give somewhere.
Well, so this might be, this is interesting because PayPal had a very difficult battle to face with gaining like brand recognition and trust in the beginning. But now I think we're all very aware of what that model is. And there's a lot of trust online with, you know, placing payments and placing credit card purchases. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of room in the space for innovation. Is PayPal going to be the one to innovate? I don't know.
Yeah.
Amazon has a phenomenal payments. Experience. In fact, I used Amazon on Kickstarter not too long ago.
It's one of the easiest by far.
Yeah,
it's,
I think it's great. The thing that concerns me is I buy a lot of things on Amazon. Like all kinds of things. I don't know if there's a lot of things I've bought on Amazon that I would want to share with my data with somebody else. I mean, some Amazon partner, you know. So I don't know. I don't know. Amazon.
So
it's weird.
The place where I see Amazon payments really, really taking hold is, you know, once we can start it, you know, as long as Amazon actually keeps Alexa open, which I think they will.
Yeah.
If they can, you know, if we start, what they might do is sort of force everyone to use their payment service through Alexa, and take a cut of every little transaction that comes through, really any of their channels.
Really?
Then all
they get paid like five ways, right? They're going to get paid. They're going to get paid because anything that you develop on as an Alexa skill will be,
they'll take a cut.
Yeah, they'll take a cut out of the AWS Lambda charge. Like, they'll get paid for the infrastructure. Yep. Then they're going to get in the data chain interchange. Then they're going to get paid for the payment. Then you probably bought it on a marketplace where they're going to get a payment, you know, the payment going the other way to the merchant. They're going to take a cut of that.
And then
take a cut
of payments.
They get six cuts of the pie.
You know, which hopefully, they'll consolidate that, like, to something that people can actually bite into.
So what do you think the future looks like of where they're going beyond Alexa's... no, shut up, Alexa. No.
She who shall not be named.
So, What is the future look like? Let's kind of take it back from there. What does the future look like out beyond... you know, the standalone devices like the Echo?
That's a good question. I think, you know, it, as Amazon begins to take some of these sort of standalone products, something we already mentioned, that payments combined with Echo, I think we could start to see a future that is driven by, you know, Alexa everywhere,
right,
if you will. Right. So, you know, maybe like, you know, it becomes, Alexa becomes more than just something that we can purchase things with through our Echoes, but yeah, something that sticks with us throughout the entire day.
Like a wearable, like, or on your phone, or what? Like, how do you see that?
Yeah, device agnostic.
But the problem is they're never going to have the leg up that, you know, Apple or Google are going to have, because Apple and Google have the ability to do the, like, device daydream, like, wake state thing where you, like, right, like the Echo has with a command word that makes it listen. They're never going to open up that ability on the phones to Amazon. There's never going to happen. In fact, right, they just changed, this happened not too long ago. They ripped down, this is so inside baseball, but I think it's worth mentioning, the Apple App Store actually, took down the, what is it called? There's the color shift application that changes your phone from like a bluish tint to a yellowish tint. It's like,
yeah,
I can't remember the name of the application right now, but you know what I'm talking about, right? Right. So, yep, it's supposed to be easier on the eyes, helps with concentration. If you're looking at your phone at nighttime, it's supposed to help you.
It's called, ink, something ink.
Yeah. I cannot remember right now. I always do this to myself. I bring up things that I'm not prepared to talk about, but they said the reason that they pulled it off the App Store was not because in the brand new iOS 9 that functionality was, you know, bundled in, which everybody was, you know, the conspiracy theorists kind of came out and said that that's what it was. It actually was because the app developer was using a hack or a workaround to keep the app running and at attention in the background at all times by playing a silent audio file. And this was like a hack that had been developed by Facebook to keep Facebook at the forefront all the time and running. And that's why people have complained about Facebook having bad battery life on your phone. This is the reason, right, why, is because they want Facebook to always be running and always at attention. So not just push notifications come through, but literally everything is always there and at your fingertips.
Forefront.
But the problem with that is, especially from a Facebook Messenger standpoint, the problem is, you know, that them closing that loophole shut out a bunch of developers and from having the ability to have the phone be able to, you know, ambiently be available at all times. And so unless they purposely make the command word, stand at attention sort of word available, which is available right now, you can say, "Hey Siri," you can say, you know, the, right, Alexa A word, which I'm trying to, if you pause after saying that word, she wakes up and I don't want to wake her up right now. But the idea is there are these words that activate those devices, and that's how they become so commonplace in our life, is they're always there at the ready. Amazon has to transcend that. Now, I know that they'd have the Fire tablets, right?
Right. So the question is, would they ever try to release the phone ever again after the shame?
That
was...
It's such a shame because I'm not a fanboy by any means. I think I had a Fire tablet, the very first one ever. Mm-hmm. Yep. I also,
I've had a couple.
Yeah, I used to have the Kindle. I used to have that. So their devices aren't bad.
Especially at their price point.
I know, especially at the price point. You know, it's always the loss leader sort of like philosophy. It's the Gillette, you know, we'll make the money on the razors.
Which give away the blade. Which is so surprising.
Right.
Why, like, when they introduced the phone at, like, what was it, like $800 or
something?
Yeah,
I think I think they got too big for their britches and thought they were Google.
I think you're right. I think they said, hey, you know, we're able to compete at that.
Or at least,
instead of sticking to the formula that's benefited.
I just don't see them being able to compete and have the platform pervasiveness into the future the way that Google and Apple can, but they certainly have the marketplace. So, you know, there's going to have to, I guess where I'm trying to go and what I'm trying to tease out is there is a breed of product that is going to a channel or a niche of a product that is going to exist in the wearable space that I think will bring Alexa to everybody, but we don't know what that is yet because it's not here.
Well, they introduced the Tap, which is sort of their first foray into that.
Is it though?
You know, kind of. I mean, do you watch the commercial? That's what they were trying to say it was. I feel like
this is me, like
Alexa everywhere,
surreptitiously typing in the background so I can see what. Oh, the tap. Yeah, but it's like it. Yes, yes, yes. It's like a battery powered Bluetooth speaker you can take anywhere.
Yeah,
and use it. And because it's Bluetooth, it could use your phone as right. the data connection. That's genius. Yeah,
yeah.
It has to get much smaller. Find
ways around it, and eventually, you know? I think that they'll probably release a phone or another device of some sort that we'll want to take with us everywhere. Maybe I don't even know. I mean, maybe it will be some kind of device that goes around our ear, or maybe it'll be integrated into like some a sort headphone of glasses or I don't know.
You know what I would totally buy, you know, it'd be phenomenal. I wear Apple headphones all the time, for doing work yeah. and listening to music. I find them to be very, very comfortable. I know some people complain about them. I've never had a problem with them. If I had a Bluetooth version of that had like, you know, that had sort of that Alexa thing built in,
that would be sick. That'd
be phenomenal.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So like a Beats Play, right? Like Amazon
yep.
having a Beats Play, kind of like Apple has a Beats Play. I don't know.
That's a possibility. Yeah, that could be interesting. I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think the wearable space is probably the only. I don't know how else they could get in there, and that might actually even be able to if it okay, was I've got a wearable.
One other way they could get in there.
Yeah, yeah, get in there. Get me. Tell me.
Microsoft.
They could buy LinkedIn from Microsoft.
They could buy LinkedIn from Microsoft. No. What I'm saying is, I don't know. Microsoft might. They might get desperate.
Like a partnership.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, Cortana's awesome. I actually really like Cortana, no doubt about it. But Microsoft might be looking for a way to get more users, and I could see a desperation play.
I mean, there's a lot of people that are coming up in the space that I think have not come into these conversations that I think have big interests in commerce, like Adobe, right? And
no,
I I think yeah. there's a lot of massive players out there who we've not heard from that I think will continue that will, if they venture in and make the foray into the mix of digital commerce, I think will you know, this it really could disrupt the whole market. But I think
they are trying to.
Well, it's obvious. I mean, the purchase of Omniture yeah. was a big play in yeah. the space of big data and their marketing cloud, their marketing platform.
But I think they bid on Hybris, didn't they?
That's what I hear. Like, that's some hearsay. That's some hearsay.
On Demandware. Yeah. No. I think Hybris is documented, isn't it? I could be wrong about that. Demandware was hearsay, but very strong. Yeah,
very, very strong hearsay. I was at IRCE with you. Yes. And we've in IRCE 2016, we're in Chicago, and I kept hearing this from like various people that Adobe's in the market to purchase you know, a cloud commerce platform. But the commerce platforms that exist right now, and this actually might be a good place to sort of, man, we have so much more to talk about, but we're so chatty. But I think the commerce platforms of the future have to be very focused on, you know, I use air quotes, omnichannel. The channels of the future don't look like the channels of today. And the channels of the future look a lot more like Facebook Messenger and you know, Siri voice integration, and they look a lot less yep. like BobsTackleShop.com, which let's right. make sure that that's not like a porn domain. BobsTackleShop.com is a very, very safe parked domain that you could all visit right now. But yeah, I would just say that those commerce platforms of the future need to get away from the lowest common denominator of commerce that we exist in today, and look toward servicing you know, a worldwide audience that, you know, is engaging in a lot of different ways, and also just device continuity, like online, on chat, on text, on mobile app, yes. on you know.
Well, and how bots might play into that.
Yeah, so you guys see right here, there's so much opportunity for us to talk about the future of future commerce. Brian, as we kind of close here, can you tell us what all we have to look forward to, like the kinds of topics we'll be covering here in the near future?
Sure. I mean, bots, talking about Obviously a lot on voice, a lot on Google Home coming up.
That we didn't so much there. Google Home and Nest and all Watson, that stuff. Watson.
IBM Watson and cognitive commerce. That's a huge play. Actually, IBM's dumping all of their chips. Not all of them, but a lot of chips
into Watson. And the chips are blue. They're blue chips.
They are blue. They are blue chips. That's right.
Yeah, and there's so much in the realm of like you said, the ultra future stuff. I think cognitive commerce or virtual reality, ambient commerce, the things that we don't even know that we need that will arrive.
There's some stories, you know, of the future. I think here. Between all these different plays, what we're going to start to see is a different life and a different purchasing pattern for people. It's going to be so much more natural, and it's going to be really effective. I think it's going to make us more efficient people.
Yeah. And I think that's it too. As you know, as we sort of close out, future commerce is going to be all about, how people interact, with how people interact and engage with, businesses and brands, but also how we do business, and how brands, and businesses can, bring products, and solve problems and bring products to customers who are looking for them. So I really think there's, so much in the realm of AI and machine learning and all these things that I think are cutting edge that we're going to be able to talk to. And we're going to get some of the top minds in this space to come and tell their stories to you as well. So anything else you have left to say before we close?
I mean, we're going to have some fun little segments in the future as well. We'll be talking about Amazon Skills. We'll have a little segment on that and, other fun stuff that we're going to do. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot to talk about. There's going to be a lot that we're going to do. Like we said before, we're going to have Alexa on the show. it's going to be a good time. I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. Thanks, Brian. And so you can catch us online at futurecommerce.fm, and we want to hear from you. So if you could leave a comment below, check out the show notes for a little bit more in depth and hit some of the links there. If you're on iTunes, please subscribe and give us a 5-star. And check out some of the other podcasts from some of our friends. They'll be linked down below at the bottom of the site. Until then, I'm Philip.
I'm Brian.
And this is Future Commerce.